Carlton here is the case of Reginald Conrad Collard and Patricia Ann Collins. Ms. Collins? Yes, ma'am. Ms. Collins, what I always like to do with individuals who are pro se or representing themselves is basically give you a little bit of an outline. You've been sitting here all morning and listening to the arguments, so I guess you have a pretty good feel as to what we do. We're really interested in hearing any issues of law that you would want to raise. You can depend on the fact that we have read the briefs and that we understand generally everything that is going on. And what we would look for you and Mr. Huddleston, who is well known to the court, to do is to simply tell us things that you believe are important to help us resolve the case. And we promise that we won't treat you like a lawyer. All right? All right, you know. Mr. Huddleston, have you noted your appearance, sir?
I have, Your Honor.
All right. Ms. Collins, does she need to sign that, Erica?
She signed as well.
Oh, she did sign?
During the break.
All right, thank you. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
No, sir, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes.
Thank you, sir. You may begin when ready.
Thank you. May it please support John Huddleston on behalf of Reginald Collard. This is an appeal from a divorce case from the Circuit Court of Loudoun County. It presents essentially a very...
Counsel, may I interrupt you and just go to the heart of the issue?
Absolutely.
Since you're the last case today, how did the judge abuse his or her discretion, the trial judge?
Judge, I had one other experience before the Court of Appeals, and I got in that case just about as far with my opening before the first question was in the number. So that was sort of the expedition. I'm not sure why we bring those. Judge, in a couple of respects, first of all, in setting a permanent award of spousal support, the court is really constrained or at least guided by 13 factors that are set forth in Section 20-7.1, and specifically, and there, as is often the case, there's a couple of different ways of saying it, was essentially the same thing, and in this case it does in a couple of sections. It talks about the need to set forth the ability to pay, and that must be established by Mr. Howard as an essential element in this case. Specifically, there was no evidence of his income, there was no evidence of his assets, there was no evidence of his earning capacity. I believe that covers two prongs there. And in these cases, Judge, the burden is on the party seeking support to present proof of that case. The authority on that is very clear. The second way that the court abused its discretion is it seemed to set a different standard in this case for the judge's words set forth in a couple places were how difficult this was because there was no evidence presented of his income or earning capacity. And then the judge repeated that a second day, and indeed it's in the final order of divorce, an outright finding that there was no evidence of his income for it. Then at the court took a recess and reconvened at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then in the findings, the court, I think, misapplied the standards and ignored that it was on the burden of the party seeking support to prove all of the elements that are necessary to secure an award by changing the standard.
Didn't the Penalty Levy order specifically say, you know, it's not going to be the basis of a final?
Absolutely. The court used exclusively the Pendente Leidy order as the basis to do it, and then said he didn't prove he couldn't pay it for it. But there are really two elements. Not only did the Pendente Leidy order say this is without prejudice, it can't be used going forward, but the statute, Section 20-103, Section E, I believe, says the very same thing, that it is not to be used at any final hearing. And indeed, that was the sole method for determining the basis for the spousal support.
Counsel, probably the only way that a pendente lite order can be used would be perhaps for rebuttal purposes. Perhaps if a person denied having any income at all, and of course there had been an order and their circumstances hadn't really changed, not in the way this judge used it, but perhaps as far as some type of challenge in reference to it, but not here.
I think that's correct, and I think that this is probably is doubly difficult in this situation because we have a scenario where this wasn't a Pendente Leidy order that reflected the results of a hearing before the court that said, okay, here's what your income was, here's what we find, your job may have been this, at which point he may have denied it later. This was a consent order. For there were no findings set forth in there for a court to use as a basis of anything, even in that, I think, very limited basis for that. So, kind of in furtherance of that, Judge, it's, I believe the testimony of the order is very straightforward. The argument we set it out a couple of different ways, but at the end of the day, there was simply no income presented. This court, in more recent vintage, has had a couple of cases that are unpublished opinions, and therefore not presidential, but use it's the Byrd case and the Gregory case, and it really takes the other side of the element a little bit. In Byrd, there wasn't really any evidence presented of any need in that case, yet there was a finding. And in the Gregory case, there was a presentation of some evidence as to need, but it was deemed so inherently incredible by the court that it shouldn't have been followed, and then it was kind of followed anyway, and that was the basis of the source. This is the other side, and quite frankly, I think it gives greater clarity for it. Need for the recipient is somewhat amorphous for that. Earning capacity seems to be a little bit more concrete. What is the earnings? What are the methods? It's a more tangible means of putting it. There are W-2s. There are pay stubs. There are indeed other creative elements of saying, look, I've gone through every bank statement and totaled up all the deposits, and that must have come from somewhere. Explain it. We don't have any of that. Indeed, we have nothing. We have a couple conclusory statements of once upon a time for it. But the evidence before the court was these parties were not in a good financial situation. There were no assets effectively to equitably distribute. We had simply a couple of debts that the court ultimately assigned. There had been two bankruptcies by the parties, and the house foreclosed upon. In terms of anything there, in terms of assets, it was just non-existent. There was no evidence of income. And I think it leads finally to the point that I'll close on. As with all cases, when spousal support is set by the trier of fact, it is modifiable based on the change of circumstances. Based upon this determination, I am not sure how it would ever be possible to show a change of circumstances other than possibly career change, because the standard seems to be, in this case, for it, that it was up to Mr. Collard to determine why he couldn't make the payment, indeed the improper standard. But with no predicate finding of any earnings or anything from before, I'm not sure it's a standard he could ever meet as a change of circumstances. Judge, these are often difficult cases, as I said in my argument before, especially when a pro se person may be before the court, and indeed the court often gives some deference in terms of how cases are presented, and I think this case was no exception. But what we would ask the court to do is, as the court is really constrained to do, is follow what the evidence is for it. This is a lawsuit. It is guided by the principles and the rule of law. It is guided by what was presented. And 20-107.1 is very clear as to what is required. It is also very clear as to whose burden it is to present the proof. There being no such proof, we would ask the court reverse the decision as to spread and enter final judgment. Failing that, we would ask that to the extent the court needs to believe it needs to be centered, done by the trial court, reverse and
reverse and final judgment would be, if we were inclined to do that, a very harsh result, particularly when it wasn't the wife on this case, I'm sorry, Ms. Collins, who's responsible for the record being short. Wouldn't a better remedy be to reverse and remand for findings consistent with the requirements of the code?
I think that's fine. I think it's fine based on the evidence, but certainly not a scenario where it's opened up for a new trial. I think it's I think it's constrained by what the evidence was at the time, not an invitation to attend.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Ms. Tolson, have you ever heard the old Chinese saying, be careful what you wish for, you might get it?
Judge, I certainly have. I certainly am familiar with that.
Ms. Collins, we received a notice that you wanted to say something. I can assure you that we've read everything that's presented here. Did you want to come to the lectern and say anything, ma'am? Okay, that's fine. It's your day, ma'am.
Ma'am, can you turn the... Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I do still have a financial need moving forward. I'm not able to pay my rent, pay my bills on my own, and I hope that the alimony can still continue to be there.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I believe we understand what your argument is, ma'am. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right, that concludes our court for today. Mr. Huddleston, it's always good seeing you. Ms. Collins.